Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. I'm sorry for the delay in getting the show started. We were all just catching up. It's been a while. We're checking in with each other.
Oh, we're late?
Seeing it. Not really.
Okay, fine.
We're okay. Good morning and welcome to our discussion for this Monday, the 23rd of March. Very nice to have you with us. And it's always a pleasure. Let me introduce our panel to you, then I'll let you know how you can get be a part of the fun. And this is fun. First of all, let's welcome back political consultant, SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter.
Always comes first.
Welcome back. Armeo, yes.
Welcome back. SUNY Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo. I want to make sure the people know she's here because then we won't get the letters and saying, why have you fired Rosemary?
Why'd you get rid of her? No, they didn't. I'm back. Happy to be here. Can't wait to go. We have lots of issues.
We do have a lot of issues. By the way, I told you this in the note I wrote you, but you have the cutest... Granddaughter is the sweetest child in the world.
I know everyone says this. My mother says, I can't do this. It's like, I'm going to be like every proud grand.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like this one.
Yeah, you had a nice cute picture, too.
Noah's kind of cute. I think we should get Gemma and Noah together.
Could be.
Let's not force that. You never know.
I never know. Right. Okay, my favorite thing was when she goes into a nap and my son exhorts me, don't let her up. She has tricks. And she's sitting in there going, Roro, where did she go? Like I abandoned her. I mean, could you ignore that?
No.
How old is the baby?
She's not quite two.
Now she's articulate.
She's articulated.
Oh, that's so
great. Once they start to talk, that's when we're in trouble.
Well, we love, and we hope all that's true, and you weren't actually in some foreign country.
Yeah, you probably
were. my poor Tunisia. Wow. Yeah. I have to go back there. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that. Rosemary, welcome back. Also, Alan Chartok is here, and always great to see you, sir. Good morning.
Yo.
And political consultant, as I started moments ago, Libby Post is with us. And it's always great to have you here.
Thank you
very much, Libby. You can join us, too. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also post your comment at WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post is 3/23/15 for more information. And get on that. All right. Let's start with, where do you want to start? Anybody have any comments? Any
you're our chief. We go where you go.
I know, but my computer just went dead.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I haven't had a problem.
Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz will officially be the first, that's actually true, but is like the first main big name candidate who will announce that he is running for president. I mean, we do have Donald Trump in the race after all. So, So Ted Cruz is the darling of the Tea Party. Ted Cruz will be making his announcement today that he is running for president of the United States. Rosemary.
Okay. My thing about him is the hypocrisy of his constituents, who include the birthers. This guy is less qualified to be president under the Constitution than they claimed Barack Obama was. His father was Cuban. His mother's a U.S. citizen. The father was an oil worker. He was born in Canada. He grew up in Texas.
Cruz was born in Canada, not his dad.
Cruz. Right. Yeah. Right. He was born in Canada of an American mother, Cuban father.
How is he able to...
Barack Obama was born in the U.S.
The Constitution says you got to be born in America.
No, the Constitution does not say that. The Constitution says you have to be a natural-born citizen. What is a natural-born citizen is the issue.
Cruz maintains,
I have an American mother. I didn't have to go through a naturalization process.
Romney said the same thing. Papa Romney said the same thing.
Papa Romney did. Because his
father was born in Mexico.
Right. But I can remember saying when he was first coming to the fore, coming into the spotlight. At least we don't have to worry about this jerk being president, and here we are. Oh, my gosh. But the hypocrisy of people who support him after they crucified Barack Obama over the same issue is just amazing.
Well, and to your point, and then Libby, to your point is that it's also the same group. I mean, it's the same very rabid conservative group saying, get him, get him, get him.
Right.
Oh, okay.
It's like O'Reilly, when the liberal Brian Williams lies or tells a mistruth or whatever, however we characterize that, get rid of them all, they're protecting
But when I do it,
and
it's
O'Reilly,
okay.
he's just an entertainer, he's a good guy. Terrible.
My problem is that and you'll all hold me responsible for saying this.
Probably.
If I'm, you're right, if I'm the Democratic really. Party, I'm down, as I've said so many times, by the side of my bed, hands pointed to the heavens saying,
that's right.
Please, dear God, let right. this be Ted Cruz.
Oh, as yeah.
The,
oh,
that's true. Absolutely.
Because the middle is the definition of who right. votes for president.
Right. Right.
But don't you see... And there, I know there's been a lot of talk about this, and we've talked some here on the program about it, but there's a lot of concern about the Republican primary system and the debates and
correct.
How they beat up each other, and it became a cartoon and so forth because they were all these swirling ideologies and they were all beating each other up, and then you have this bloodied candidate that comes to the fore. So. But you look at somebody like Ted Cruz and you look at who is announcements that are to come, whether that's Chris Christie, we don't know, we assume, maybe. Also, of course, Jeb Bush. And do you see that same kind of setup where you're going to have this party system that's going to beat itself up?
Look, it works both ways.
Well,
It works both ways because if the Democrats had their choice, they might vote for a progressive to run for office. If that happened, they would be dumb. I mean, you know, that they would eschew the middle and they would lose. So that's the system. That's the way it works. And I don't think it's so bad.
But maybe it's rose-colored glasses or hindsight is 20/20. But while it was a bruising campaign, and it certainly was, you had two ideologies in Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama during the primary system in 2000.
Right. I'm not so sure it's right, but go ahead. Finish up.
What?
I'm not so sure you're right that there were two ideologies.
Well, what I'm saying is that they were able to go at it and still have a candidate emerge who was not adversely impacted by the it seemed to strengthen the cause more than it did hurt it and battle it.
Well, that's because she ultimately endorsed Obama,
oh, sure.
and so did Bill, and so that was really helpful to that equation. So, what we're going to have here is this panoply of pandering so far to the right, which is what's happening. Cruz is announcing at Liberty University, which is the college founded by Jerry Falwell in Lynchburg, I think, or Pittsburgh, whatever it is, in Virginia, wherever it
Lynchburg,
is,
Virginia.
In Lynchburg, Virginia, and
controversial school.
Right. It's a very controversial school. He's pandering as far right as you can get. You're going to get some of the other ones doing the same. Jeb Bush already came out in saying that it's okay to discriminate against people based on your religious beliefs. You know, he said that the other day in response to some of the bills that are coming out to let people discriminate against, like in Michigan, EMTs don't have to deal with gay people if they don't want to, based on their religious beliefs. So, you know, they're all going to be pandering to the right. It's like there's this swill going down the toilet bowl is what I can see is where the Republican Party is going here. And what? Oh, Ted Cruz is going to bring out the Hispanic vote, when he's so virulently anti-immigrant and has been so horrible on issues like Obamacare, which the poor Hispanic community has benefited from. I mean, you know, where are they going to go? All they have to do is go further to the right. They'll all beat each other up. Jeb Bush will come out of this probably as the victor. Maybe Ted Cruz will be vice president, or I don't think Bush is that stupid, but maybe Paul, the guy from Wisconsin, will end up being vice president. Rand Paul.
Paul. He's from Kentucky.
Yeah.
Who
I'm talking about. Scott Walker. That's who it is.
Thank you.
Scott Walker will be vice president. You know, I think Paul Ryan has done that once already. And it'll be a battle, as Alan says, for the middle, which is what it always is.
Well, see, it goes to motive. The motive for Cruz is he can't lose in this. I mean, either he becomes the preeminent, sort of right-winger in the country, and he writes a book and he makes a lot of money, and more than Andrew.
If he can actually write a book, which I'm not sure he can.
Right. And
doesn't stop anybody.
Yeah, no.
No. So that's one of the reasons that you take yourself out of the crowd. My hope is that he wins the nomination.
Well, if he does, that really
be
is
careful
the
of what
death
you
knoll.
Wish for.
Yeah, but
right.
we don't. Yeah,
it's really a death
we don't
knoll
see
for
that
the party.
Happening, though, do we?
No.
I mean, there's not enough. Well, there, do you think there's that much support?
Let me put it this way. We know that that New Hampshire is the first place, and we know there's already some shuffling going on in which Jeb Bush is not on anybody's first list.
Yeah.
So anything can happen in these things. And as you said, Joe, it's the right wing that comes out in these Republican primaries. Mm-hmm. To begin with, about 15%, I think that's the figure I read, about 15% vote in a, in that kind of primary. And then when that 15% becomes, you know, one part of the party, the right of the party, things can get pretty dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but yeah. Dangerous to the point where the country's going to elect somebody like that?
No.
Yeah.
On the contrary,
right? I think the coalition he's putting together is quite intimidating, and I don't want to be under that kind of ruling. It would be the Tea Party, evangelicals, hawks on war.
Right.
That's a terrible coalition.
Indeed.
Right. We'd all be shipped out.
Run for the hills, WAMC listeners.
But, yeah. But the question is, how does that play during a primary season among Republican voters?
Well, I think they're, Libby and Allen are telling you, it plays well.
Yeah, but the thing is that it gets national attention. And so it gives the middle of the country the opportunity to form their opinions about these candidates and say, this is not what America is and this is not what I believe in before the Republican convention is even over.
We've gotten a lot of mail.
Let's go. Well, actually, can we take a break?
Anything you say, Joe.
So let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll because we don't want to take anybody off. No. We'll do that, and people pay money. We want to make sure they get what they got coming to them. So we'll do that, and we'll be
Step
back
right in
right after this. Mm.
Support comes from the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services, and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. And Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet, mannixmarketing.com.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo make up our panel this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We've been discussing Ted Cruz throwing his hat into the ring officially today for President of the United States, and we've been getting some letters on that, and we go to those now.
We will. There's no question about it. You're right. And from David, it would be a tragedy if Ted Cruz becomes president. It would cause our reputation to be lower around the world, and unfortunately has been courting the Jewish votes. I really hate Cruz, and I am Jewish and pro-Israel. Very scary. Michael says, he was born in Canada. How can he be elected president? Where's his birth certificate? Please ask the question. We did, and Rosemary articulately spoke to it, which is, once again, Rosemary?
Well, the Constitution is not as clear as we think. It does not say you have to be born in the U.S. It says you must be a natural-born citizen. And absent a Supreme Court ruling, we don't know exactly what that is.
Yes, and we know that there's precedent for this, as in the case of Romney Sr., who was born in Mexico, but I think maybe in an American embassy there, or something like
well,
that.
Well, John McCain also was born in the Panama Canal Zone. Mm-hmm. But there was an act of Congress. Hillary Clinton voted for this, too, by the way, declaring him a naturalized citizen, natural-born citizen under the U.S. Constitution. They actually put through a resolution to clear him.
Okay, so Jonathan says, Libby Post said that in Michigan, EMT workers do not have to treat gay patients. That is untrue. I'm in the car, so I can't send you a link, but just check it out. I'm Snoops. You can't just say things as facts when they are not true.
There are many, many bills being passed, and in Michigan, one has been passed that allows medical professionals to deny service to people based on the medical professional's religious belief. And if that religious belief is that gays are sinners or whatever, they don't have to do this.
Has that been signed into law? Or are you saying this has been,
it's been passed?
Right. Okay.
And so more and more of these rights to discriminate based on religious beliefs are being sponsored and passed and signed into law.
Steve says he does not have the Pat Buttram. Who's Pat Buttram? Buchanan, maybe he meant?
Maybe.
Pat Buttram
fan base sewn up. Steve.
Must be Buchanan.
Yeah, must be Buchanan.
Bill Robertson.
Alan, it may not be so bad for those of us in the middle class like you and I, but elections where both sides pander to the middle are not good for people in poverty or people of minority status. I'm a history teacher and recently interviewed for a position in an urban school district, middle school. 87% of the kids are in poverty, and most aren't literate when they enter the fifth grade. A vote for moderate ultimately means nothing will change for these children. How often did the president, parenthesis, who I like, talk about poverty in his two elections? It's not right. Ryan, as I always tell my students, there's a big difference between what is, that's what I just described, and what should be. What is that the middle class in this country win elections, and that the strategies around that are the middle class strategy, which is you win. In order to win the election, you have to get the middle. The poor do not vote in the same numbers that the wealthy do. We know that. And if they did, you would never have, a Republican in Congress. But they don't. And so I just would like to respond to you on that. And I guess Marcia says, how can he be a candidate when he's born in Alberta, Canada? That was just addressed. And so that's what I guess. Okay. And then Jim says, a Rodney Dangerfield look-alike as president? maybe too much even for the Tea Party. I tell you, if he runs, he won't get any respect. That's funny. Okay. And that's what I got.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back and continue our conversation on the program this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Monday morning. We have a lot of issues to discuss, but we also have a lot of letters on the Ted Cruz affair.
Indeed.
One of my favorite films, The Ted Cruz Affair. And so you do those, and then we'll go through a lightning round and get through as many topics as we can.
Sure, will do. Okay, so Jerry from Gilderland says, you have to credit the Republicans for finding a Canadian who is easy to dislike. That's pretty good. In case you don't get it, the Canadians are nice people. Okay.
Usually.
Yeah. And well, no, but he's out. He's renounced them. Makes sense. Ted Cruz has renounced his Canadian connection.
Yes.
So he's not really
a Canadian.
Canadian, you know what I mean? And George says, Libby should take a trip through the South where Christian religion and military establishments are the basis of much of the culture. And that's George from Kingston. And then
how many trips to the South have you taken, Libby?
I try to stay above the Mason-Dixon line. I'll go to Virginia, where Lynn's family is,
right?
Or South Beach, Florida, or the East Coast of Florida.
Yeah. And that's all right. Well, Florida doesn't
really
count.
About it.
Yeah, okay.
And then Ellen says, "Hi, Joe." So this is your this is addressed to you, Joe. I have been wondering if there was any precedent for an election where there is no sitting president running, but no primary challenge to the one person the party has decided will be their candidate. I don't think Clinton should run without a primary, and I'm not sure why the Democrats think this is a good idea. Curious what you think.
I defer to Alan.
Well, first of all, I'm a Democrat, and I vote Democratic. Actually, I'm an independent, but I don't know that she shouldn't have a primary. So, in other words, you have a loaded part of your message. Are you following that?
Yes.
Yeah. So, in other words, So it isn't that. And then there are almost never a lack of a primary because there's always some guy, no matter how far down the feeding chain, who is going to run in a Democratic primary. So there'll be a primary. Our good friend Ira, who we love so much, who's on this program a lot, brought me up short quite correctly and said, Pat Buttram was a good old boy actor in Western, sidekick of Gene Autry. I believe you are right, Ira. You are absolutely right. And then
a somewhat obscure reference to use in a
right. But I remember Pat Buttram.
Okay, that makes the letter though even more undiscernible. What he, Cruz has not sewn up the
Pat Buttram.
The Pat Buttram.
Well, the folks that like Gene Autry and the I don't know, but okay. I checked Snopes, folks.
Yes.
Snopes
about
Michigan. And the House passed a religious freedom bill that might potentially allow EMT personnel to exercise religious objections to treating gay patients. It has not passed the other house, nor has it been signed into law. But I have a feeling if it passes the other house, it just might get signed into law. So there we go. And that's from Snopes.
We have, does anyone really believe that he will, I guess it's Ted, be anything more than a token candidate? I know that the right has moved further over, but this guy is at the wingtip. Do you guys think that the Republican base has moved that far over? I don't. I think that the Republican primary turnout could determine an unelectable candidate for the Republican Party. And I think that there will be many Rockefeller middle, and they still are, middle round Republicans who are good, very good people who will make choices. And they're not going to choose somebody from the far right. That's my bet. The Pat Buttram I know as a film TV show buff was Gene Autry's sidekick and Green Acres, Mr. Hanley.
Haney.
A hokey kind of hillbilly cowpoke. Fellow.
Seems to be a reference.
Yeah.
To the not too educated mountain folk. Ah, okay. So, yeah, Cruz is Ivy League educated. He's no hillbilly. So,
you wouldn't know it.
Even though his ideas.
No,
I know.
I mean,
we don't like him on the show, do we?
That's what's so amazing.
No.
All right, let's go to other issues and talk about stuff that is going on. I do want to get to the Supreme Court case that is getting underway today, which is the next great. Did you all get this? No, you're all looking at me like we didn't get
like
this.
Like what?
That's right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I feel like the dog ate my homework, Joe.
I'm sorry. I sent it this morning and I said, here's another one.
I didn't get it.
So the next great First Amendment battleground is just 6 inches high. It is a license plate bearing the Confederate flag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
9 states let drivers choose specialty license plates featuring the flag and honoring the sons of Confederate veterans, which says it seeks to celebrate Southern heritage, but Texas refused to allow the group's plates, saying the flag was offensive. Yes, Texas. On Monday, the Supreme Court will hear a challenge to that decision in Walker versus Sons of Confederate Veterans, a case that considers the limits of free expression and the meaning of a charge symbol that many associate with secession and slavery. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's another one of these First Amendment cases that the court could be taking up, which I find really interesting. The other, of course, is the fraternity, where was that hate speech? And they are contending, no, under the First Amendment, they can do that. They weren't riling up any violence. And this would be the same. And hateful as it is, not hate speech, those are two different things, I think under the Supreme Court they should be allowed to do it. If nothing else, you know what cars to avoid on the highway.
Well,
yeah.
Don't cut that person off. There's probably a little road rage
possible,
going on inside.
But exactly. A Confederate veteran, is there a difference?
There are none in Nazi Germany.
You're not allowed to invoke. In Germany, you're not allowed to invoke the Nazi Party. Too dangerous. And we know that because skinheads and others still roam the streets and do that. You are not allowed to yell fire in a crowded theater.
Right.
So the question is, and I'm on the fence on this one. I'm sort of with Rosemary and sort of not. How would you figure? Is being a son of a Confederate and yelling Confederate the worst war in the history of this country? Right. I think we lost more people than any other way. Would that be yelling fire in a crowded theater?
Well, it certainly adds fuel to the fire of the growing amount of racism that we have going on in this country, or the foment. I mean, I think it was always there, but now it's a little more fashionable to be able to excise your racism and show it because of what we see on the national level and the disrespect for the president. And so I don't know why anyone actually would want to have a license plate with the Confederate flag on it. But there are people who do because they believe that the South will rise again in that good old boy kind of way where blacks were slaves and whites controlled. And we had apartheid here in the United States down south in those days. And I think it's just one more attempt to normalize these images that should not be normalized.
I don't know. That's plainly your Northern Jewish woman's point of view that the Confederate flag equals slavery and a return to apartheid. To many people, it's a much more benign and it's a different symbol, and that's why we have the First Amendment.
Yeah, but
so that people can do it or not do it.
But think about what it means to the people of color. Think about what it means to anybody. Any black or person in this country, any person of color in this country,
they can say, "Hey, we beat you."
Yeah, no. It's
the Confederacy
like a
is dead. Get
it's
over
a return
it.
It's a return to the days of yore.
I think that suppressing it does not make those feelings go away.
Lone Ranger.
I'd rather put more money and time and effort into like finding who lynched that man in Mississippi.
Let's spend our
time on that.
It's not either or.
The Supreme Court's not making any kind of decisions about lynching or Ferguson kind of crimes. We have black men and boys being shot on the street, and we're worried about some people showing a Confederate flag.
Yeah,
really,
there's a connection. There's a connection between wanting that flag and being able to display that flag and those killings.
You referenced Libby's Jewishness. I just wanted to talk about that because, as you know, Jews in the United States are less than 2% of the entire population. Yes, that's right. So clearly there are many others. So the fact that Libby is, here and a liberal, I think is more relevant than the fact that she's Jewish in this case.
But we wouldn't allow, I don't think we would allow anybody to have a swastika on their license plate.
On the license plate.
On a license plate, right? I don't think that would be allowed.
I don't even think it would be entertained. It would be, you'd really be taking your life in your hands to have such a license plate.
No, that's not the point.
It's the same ACLU thing.
But by the way, 15 other states, right? Yeah. Or 16 other states allow the license plate.
Yeah, it's not just.
And they're all below the Mason-Dixon line, I assume.
And it's a, so again, going back to their argument of honoring war dead and also honoring Southern heritage. Okay. I just want to reestablish that. Okay.
Stephen just wrote and said, sorry to be incoherent in the last message. Cruz and Buttram look remarkably alike.
Oh, there you go. Steve. That's all there is to it. Okay.
And he says, Cruz is very smart. We take him lightly at our peril. Steve, the reason that that's an important letter,
that's a good letter,
is that there have been some terrible people in history who people thought were clowns in the beginning.
Right.
And who turned out to set the world upside down.
That's Speaking of swastikas.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we will go on to other issues. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. New England Auction, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, for 40 years, an international auction gallery offering fine art, books, maps, and antiques. 413-665-3253 for gallery and auction information. And Habitat Post and Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post and beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome back. We are welcoming your letters roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue. And let's go on to other topics. The new Andrew Cuomo book, a biography, the unauthorized biography, is making the news this morning. The New York Times writes, in the first few pages of The Contender, Governor Andrew Cuomo is portrayed as a brilliant tactician and a presidential hopeful, even if not in 2016. But the tone of the unauthorized biography quickly changes, positioning Mr. Cuomo as a control-obsessed politician who showed no tolerance for criticism or retail politics. The book, scheduled for release on Tuesday, March 31st, comes just months after Mr. Cuomo released a largely positive narrative of his life in the autobiography All Things Possible. The Contender is far more measured in its appraisal of Mr. Cuomo, a Democrat, especially in the passages dedicated to his high-profile marriage to Carrie Kennedy, daughter of Robert Kennedy. Douglas Kennedy, Ms. Kennedy's brother, called Mr. Cuomo a bully, saying he did not fit in with the Kennedys. That is one article up for bids. There is also the Wall Street Journal article, which is perhaps a little more interesting in its detail of how this particular book came about. And The Contender is the latest in a series of Cuomo book projects, and it will come without the governor's involvement, despite his best efforts. Interviews with people familiar with the governor's deliberations and others who worked on the three projects shed light on a literary chess game that played out over 3 years. The author of this book is Michael Schneerson. He's a Vanity Fair writer. He secured a deal for an unauthorized Cuomo biography in January 2012. In the late spring or early summer of that year, Mr. Cuomo invited him to lunch at an oyster bar in Midtown Manhattan. There, Cuomo suggested that Schneerson, a contributing editor of Vanity Fair, but an unknown in Albany, ditch the unauthorized biography and instead work with him on a book about governing. Schneerson declined. The Democratic governor in April 2013 signed a book deal of his own with HarperCollins worth more than $700,000. He planned a quick turnaround so it would hit before the 2014 election. To date, it has sold 3,008 hardcovers, 13 audiobooks, according to Nielsen BookScan data. Mr. Schneerson had written little about politics before he signed his contract with a Hachette Book Group imprint for $250,000. But was due in part to the sense that Mr. Cuomo was a possible presidential contender. Okay.
He's a smart guy, Schneerson. He came to visit me very early in the game, and we sat around our table at home. And, you know, he was very interested, and he's very, very smart. I only take one exception, by the way, to what he is saying in the book. I think he's releasing it part and parcel. The Post gets one, you know, the Washington Post gets one. Each is given a little bit of a thing. But his assumption that Cuomo is a contender, I think to some degree, and I like this guy a lot, but to some degree is a little bit self-serving. In other words, you can't write a book if the potential is not that the guy's going to run for president. So his assessment that he is a contender, and the title of the book that he's a contender, and his ending of the book that he's a contender, I think may be a little misplaced, but I understand it. I think that's how you sell books. I think it's what it's all about.
Why do these books keep selling?
Well, this
not
book
just his own, but this one is, and I understand.
Well, his own didn't
others.
Sell.
Right.
His own was pathetic.
No one bought it.
You know, no Moreland Act Commission in his own, no Preet-Bharara, none of that was there. So this, and that's the last thing that they wanted, was this book. And they are being, the press people from the Cuomo office are coming right out, you know, and dismissing it as basically hokum. But I think that what this is the first book that ties it all together. His early career, working for Mario Cuomo, what people thought about it, what Papa Cuomo thought of Andrew Cuomo and their dissonance between them, even the way they played basketball, and then early Andrew missteps that happened, the race against McCall, even before that he had gotten himself into a certain amount of trouble, which showed up in the New York Times over some things he probably shouldn't have been doing. So this is the first book, I think, that brings it all into play.
Warren Schwartz, until recently the governor's top aide in particular, does not fare well in the book. Mr. Schneerson recounts one particularly searing expletive-laced conversation the aide had in 2011 with the senior advisor to Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City. Mr. Schwartz said he was never contacted by Mr. Schneerson, which he said pointed to the credibility of the book. If he had wanted the truth, he would have called me.
But then in the Wall Street Journal article, it says that Schneerson and Schwartz had many conversations about Schneerson writing the book about Cuomo.
So it's all in the definition. What you may be saying
is he didn't ask for his
issue about Bloomberg.
Right.
Well, look, this is the kind of stuff. This is the kind of stuff that happens. Larry Schwartz, otherwise known as Lawrence, is a take no prisoner fellow. And that's why Cuomo loved him, you know, because he'd get out there and he would do the dirty work. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, this whole issue raises for me, what is it that we want in our politicians? If we have someone who's completely buttoned down and controlling, like Hillary may be, as the governor appears to be, we sit here and criticize. Yet if it's somebody who's open and loose and not careful and controlled, like, say, our vice president, we make fun of him, too.
Well, what if
it's
the
really
guy—
hard
what
to
if,
be a politician here.
Well, it is, and there's no question, but what if he is a bully? And there's a lot of testimony in here that he is a bully. Do we want a president or a governor who's a bully?
Considering the world leaders that a president goes up against, I don't think that's such a horrible thing.
Well, it depends on how you do it and how you treat
I thought people. He was mean to Zephyr Teachout, and that was ridiculous, and he lost my vote in the primary for that, if that's what you mean. But there's different ways to be a bully. There's a certain personality type that goes into being a strong leader that's not completely attractive. I think we see that in Hillary.
Well, you know, you keep bringing the Hillary thing up, and we keep ignoring it. But
she's Nixonian.
But I want to move over to what you just said. You are a feminist, right?
Yes.
And Libby, you're a feminist, aren't you?
Yes, dear.
And Alan, you're a feminist, aren't you? Yes. I'll leave Joe out because he's the moderator, because he's also a feminist.
Yes.
But let's just say we are. And here's a book which goes into great detail about how he treated his ex-wife, and that he bullied her, and that he closed the curtains, and he told her how he wanted the house held up.
And she fought back. She's a Kennedy. She had support and resources. And she wrote a great book slamming him. Women don't need protection. They don't need to be protected from that sort of thing.
No. I'm not saying they need protection. I'm saying it goes to character. If his character is that of a bully, and for example, the way that he's bullying the New York State teachers right now, then you want to know whether or not this is the guy that you want to be in a leadership position. That's why I think this book is so important.
There's a difference between a bully and a leader. A bully threatens, a bully intimidates, and has nothing else to back him up. A leader who's strong can be a bully when it's necessary, but in a way that is good for many people. Not just himself.
I think Netanyahu has worked out well in Israel, and Mario and Andrew Cuomo would not be a horrible president.
Okay. You can vote
and
for
And I think, yes, I think there is a difference between a buller and a bully and a leader, but I think it's really close. And I think we have to look at other things besides how he treated his wife, or if he's mean to coworkers, or if he hides his email, as again Hillary and
Stop already with the Hillary slap on Hillary. You know, I mean,
she's going to be our next.
We got
president.
It. We got it, Rosemary. We know that you're tainted with the anti-Hillary gene, and that you know you're
I'm not. I'm voting for her. I'm a big, huge supporter. Well, you wouldn't know it. I have been all along, but you don't have to idolize and turn your leaders into gods. They're not. They're humans.
That's right, and they are humans. And Freud was right. And character is set when you're 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And you damn well better know what that character is before you elect somebody. Right now, we see that, I guess, the Siena poll comes out, and it shows that people don't want a lot of these substantive things put into their, into the,
budget.
And they think that that's a bullying move. You know, take it or leave it. You know, we don't. Now, look, he is a man of some substance. We know that. He had the gay rights thing passed. He did do the,
Safe Act.
And, you know,
Stop fracking.
Yeah, well. With great pushing from people like Pete Seeger and others, but he did it in the end. You're right about that. So that's interesting.
All right. All of the mail is on the Confederate flag. So
yeah,
do you want to?
No.
Okay.
We
not
get
even
it.
One.
We get it. Okay. Here we go.
Come on.
Okay.
One or two.
Bo says, "I agree with Libby. The Confederate flag is anathema to me. It has no place on license plates. Southern heritage is coded racism. Show me a state that has swastika plates. I'm speaking as a descendant of enslaved family members." Charlotte says, "I would suggest the First Amendment supports somebody applying a Confederate flag sticker, but it seems to me that applying it to a government issued license plate, enjoy the show." Interesting.
That's a good point.
Okay, and. Charlotte said, "Oh yeah, no, that was Charlotte." Okay, and then we heard we did that already. Okay. Good morning. The Confederate flag is the only flag that represents the people who literally tried to rip our country apart. Therefore, the most un-American flag that exists. If the South had won, this would not be the United States. Thank goodness for Lincoln. And Jim in Montgomery says, "Does 13 audiobook sales suggest that Cuomo is hard to listen to? I know I would certainly buy the book before the audio." And Bonnie says, "Folks, the meta message is overt with Johnny Reb's flag. Why else is it evident above the Mason-Dixon? It is not South versus North, but white versus black." Well, I don't know about that. A lot of white people lost their lives fighting that civil war. Let's see. The Stars and Bars certainly has a stark military background. Unfortunately, that honorable past has been obliterated by the intervening 150 years by this symbol's adoption by domestic terrorists and bigots. Consider the history of the swastika as its basis as a religious symbol, yet no reasonable government today would seriously promote its display.
We're out of time.
Okay, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Okay, we are out of time. You can still write us, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, Rosemary, Libby, thank you very much for being here. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Bye.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.